summer is here, and homeowners are putting a lot of time and attention into their lawns and doing everything possible to have that perfect field of green.
Well, our next guest says those perfect green lawns come at a cost. The chemicals that make them possible pollute the water supply and cause diseases in humans. She says homeowners are actually using more pesticides these days than farmers.
Dr. Diane Lewis is with us. She's an internist and nephrologist. She founded the Great Healthy Yard Project, and she has a book out by that name. She joins us now. Dr. Lewis, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I imagine as people walk or drive around, they look at lawns and don't see much of a hazard there. Big picture, why should we worry about our lawns?
Well, for me, as I learned that the chemicals that we use on our yards and in our gardens were winding up in our water supply, as a mother, I knew I had to change that, because there's no way that our children can go forward and have healthy lives if the water that they're drinking is polluted with these chemicals. As a nephrologist, I understand the importance of the water quality to our health, but I also understand the negative importance of these chemicals on our body's physiology. So while we've been taught to look at these lawns and think of them as appealing by advertising, if you look at it in that way as chemicals that are pumping up the green color, it's anything but appealing.
So what are some of the most common pesticides that we're using on our lawns that we should be worried about?
The most common pesticides that are being used are glyphosate and 2,4-D, malathion, and carbaryl. But that's not really the point or what I want people to think about. They shouldn't go into the store and look at for those specific chemicals and try and avoid them. They should just try and avoid synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, because almost all of those chemicals have problems with either causing cancer or disrupting our hormonal system, which we didn't know about before and we do know about now. And we can have really, really beautiful yards without these chemicals.
I want to get into the harm a little bit more. It seems like we use the chemicals in the yards, they end up in the water, but as they say, the dose makes the poison. Maybe there's just a little bit trace elements of these things that aren't harmful. Have we really connected the dots to know that the things we spray our lawn with are causing damage to humans?
Yes, but only recently. They harm us in a way that is different than what we understood before. In 2009, the Endocrine Society published a position paper that showed a direct link between these common household chemicals that we use on our lawns and gardens and some that we pour down our drains and diseases that are caused by disruption of our hormonal systems. This policy was based in 485 peer-reviewed journals, articles. It's not supposition. It's accepted fact, but it's new accepted fact. So it will take time for tests to be developed to corroborate the risk associated with any individual chemical and endocrine disruption, and then those tests need to be standardized.
And then you're looking for
it. Very important is endocrine disruption happens at a much, much, much smaller amount than the chemicals that cause cancer, and it's not dose-related.
So because of this, you're looking for a culture change in the way we think of our lawns, and there's the attitude, and I've felt this a little. I feel guilt if there's a dandelion here and some broadleaves over there. How do we change our mindset to get over that?
Well, one of the things we have to do is stop vilifying dandelions. Dandelions are actually pretty cool. They're sold in natural health food stores. They're a tender green in the early spring that you can eat if you're not putting chemicals on your lawn. And in fact, dandelions and clover are some of the few things that support butterflies and bees with pollen and nectar before milkweed opens. Really, we've been taught to believe that they're bad, and they're not. I was at Martha Stewart's farm with my garden club about a week ago, and her fields are filled with dandelions and buttercups because they're beautiful.
And so once we've accepted that our lawn doesn't have to be pristine grass, should we take another step? Does it have to be grass, period?
You're absolutely right, Rob. It doesn't have to be grass at all. Some grass is is still, I think, desirable for many people because it's a place to play or to barbecue. And there are, for that area of grass, there are many things we can do to take care of it more sustainably. We can choose grasses that will grow well in our climates, and then we can aerate the lawn and allow air to penetrate down to the roots of the grass, because grass is actually a plant and not a carpet. And the length of the grass blade is actually a mirror of the length of the roots underneath the ground. So if we mow our grass to 1 inch or less, which many people do, the grass can't develop strong roots. If we let the grass grow up to 4 inches and cut it down to 3, it'll develop deep, strong roots and be able to weather a drought. Then if we leave the clippings on, they return all of the nitrogen that an established lawn needs. It doesn't need fertilizer.
So I don't need to feel guilty about the dandelions, about letting the grass grow to 4 or 5 inches, and about not raking. I get to be lazy.
Maybe
this is great.
4 inches, not 5. And yeah, and definitely not raking, but mulching instead. Yeah, it's easier, but it's also much more vital. It's not sort of laid back and hippie, we're going to let this happen and not care what this looks like. You can really care what your yard looks like and what your garden looks like and be very active in gardening with native plants, replacing areas that did have grass with native plants that will welcome bees and butterflies into your yard. I had never seen a hummingbird moth before several months ago in my backyard. And we now have hummingbird moths, and I don't know if you've ever seen one.
I don't know that I have.
We went over to a lilac, which is not a native plant, but it's also not invasive, and it provides early nectar. And there was what looked like a hummingbird drinking from the lilac, and in fact, it had antenna and wings, and that's a hummingbird. Antenna and insect-type legs, and that's a hummingbird moth. So if you don't use these chemicals, you see so much more life in your yard. So you're not worried about your children rolling on the grass. You're not worried about your pets rolling on the grass. And you can rest assured that your drinking water will be clean if you get your whole neighborhood to work with you on this. And it can be a very community-building exercise for people to talk to neighbors about this, as long as they're talking about it in a gracious and constructive way. And my website and my book are designed to be that bridge that's gracious, graceful, and informative, but with, again, tier one medical research backing it up so that your neighbors can work with you.
How do we have that conversation with our neighbors? I think maybe in the old days, neighbors might scold each other for not having that pristine green lawn. How do we, in a non-scoldy way, start broaching the topic with a member of our neighborhood?
I don't think it's a scoldy thing, because I think many people didn't realize that there was a problem, and I think that was widespread. The information that this is a problem is relatively new. You know, in 2013, the EPA first released a study of all of the waters nationwide that showed that half of them had enough fertilizer in them to be deemed of poor quality to support life, and up to 71% in the Northeast and the Midwest. And then the U.S. Geological Survey released a study showing that almost every single stream, river, and lake in the contiguous U.S. had at least one pesticide, and often more. And this was also true of half of the groundwater wells. We didn't know that before. We couldn't measure these small amounts, and we didn't think these small amounts were harmful. And what's more is we didn't realize that many of these different chemicals, even though the amounts are tested separately, can act in a similar way, acting like much more of any individual problem.
So suppose someone is saying, okay, Dr. Lewis, I buy what you're saying. I'm going to try to stop spraying, but there are going to be some weeds that I want to get rid of. Sometimes it can be too hard to pull them out all by hand. Are there alternatives to sprays that you suggest that can help us out a little?
Yes, I think there are many alternatives to sprays. One of them is very simple, which is either vinegar from your house or horticultural vinegar. It's a mild acid, and it does a really good job removing weeds even from a big, long driveway or cracks in between a patio or bittersweet that's coming over from a neighbor's yard. The other thing that I use on cracks in a patio in small areas is boiling water. I'll make a pot of tea and use the extra after my teacup to pour on some weeds. So there are ways, but there are times where, despite everybody's best intentions, the Great Healthy Yard Project is not about organic farming, and it's not an absolute. It's about not putting 80 million pounds of pesticides on our yards and gardens cumulatively every year. So there are times that even in the best minimal impact management, people may need some herbicides in a small area to resolve an invasive plant issue, you know, where you cut the plant away and paint the stems rather than spraying it broadly. Or you might need, if some of your natural remedies for pests don't work, a pesticide in a small local area. But there are some really, really good organic pesticides when you need them.
We're speaking with Dr. Diane Lewis, physician and founder of the Great Healthy Yard Project, about the effects of homeowners' widespread use of lawn fertilizers and pesticides.
And we'd like to hear from you on this one. How do you maintain your lawn? Are pesticides, do you think, necessary? And are you concerned about the chemicals that get used as we take care of our lawns? Or is the concern overblown, maybe a necessary evil? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're back with Dr. Diane Lewis, physician and author of the Great Healthy Yard Project, and we're talking about the effects of homeowners' widespread use of lawn chemicals.
She says they are hazardous to our health, especially when they find our way into the drinking water. We'd like to hear from you. How do you keep up your lawn? Regular sprayings, occasional, or have you gone pesticide-free, fertilizer-free, or even grass-free? Have you changed your yard from lawn to something else? Do you use pesticides? Are you concerned about the water contamination when you do? Call in 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over at the Central Time Facebook page. Well, Dr. Lewis, are these messages starting to catch on? Are we starting to spray less?
I think it's very much catching on. I think a lot of people understand this. But I think there are a lot more that are sort of on the fence, that are concerned, as you were mentioning, they're still putting it on, but are not really happy with it. And that's why I think discussions with neighbors and explaining that it's also in the water supply and that a whole neighborhood shares a watershed, so a neighborhood can work together to make this problem better, it is making a big difference. I think it's such an easy thing for us to make a huge improvement of, without doing much, without any time, without any money, and just with a little bit of knowledge.
Are individuals mostly taking the lead on this, or do you see community groups or even local governments getting involved?
I think it's a mix. You know, in 2011, New York State passed the Safe Child Playing Fields Act, and a number of states followed after them that prohibited the use of these chemicals on school grounds. Now, clearly, that doesn't solve the problem if your child's coming home to play on your yard and you're using chemicals, or if your neighborhood is still using chemicals and they're going into the water. But it makes a big difference not only in not exposing children at school, but in educating a community. In addition to that, the EPA is proposing new rules for agricultural workers to protect them from increased incidences of Parkinson's, prostate cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma from many of the chemicals that we use on our yards. I think this comment period runs through the middle of August, and I think as more people read that and are aware of that, they're understanding that there is a serious problem with these chemicals and that it's not worth using them to chase an antiquated aesthetic of ridding ourselves of dandelions.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Cindy on the line in Eau Claire. Cindy, hi.
Hi. We've helped reduce our lawn partly by making perennial beds, but we planted a type of grass called no-mow lawn, which we bought seed from Prairie Nursery, which is in Westfield, Wisconsin, and Neil DeBole is the owner. He's on Larry Mueller show a lot. And this is the third year of our lawn, and people ask what kind of grass seed we planted because it's bright green. It's amazing. It chokes out the weeds. It doesn't need fertilizer. Takes a little work to establish, but if you go to prairienursery.com, you'll learn all about it. It's just amazing.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. No mow lawns that apparently don't need as much pesticide or fertilizer, Dr. Lewis? Are you familiar with those?
They're a wonderful solution, and it's really great to have someone that you're working with in your community that knows about these things. It's a vendor that knows about these things. It makes such a big difference. You know, with every change comes entrepreneurship, and in this case, it's really good for the community as well as for the vendor.
And Dr. Lewis, earlier you mentioned buying grass seed if you're planting grass that is appropriate for your climate, and I think you wrote that just because it's on the local store shelf doesn't mean it's right for your climate.
Oh, that's absolutely true. But you can go either to someone like she just mentioned that's clearly really knowledgeable about and cares about these things and is researching them, or you can go online to find out specifically what works well in your climate, in your region, because Wisconsin has several different, it has shoreline and it has, prairies, it has different areas that will require different grasses. But it has a number of really wonderful native grasses that will flourish in including, I guess there's big blue stem, there's little blue stem, there are tufted hair grasses. It depends where you are in your within Wisconsin and what your yard looks like, which grass you're going to choose.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. We've got Danny on the line now in Madison. Danny, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
I sure can. What did you want to bring up?
Okay, I'm on a Bluetooth. I took out my entire backyard last year, put down landscape fabric, and planted blueberries. And 5 years ago, I took out my entire front lawn and naturalized it and put in wildflowers. I wanted to ask a question about the vinegar. Can I use white vinegar to acidify my backyard for the blueberries?
Danny, thanks for the call. That's a pretty specific garden tip, of vinegar to acidify for the blueberries.
That is a very specific garden tip, and I would actually speak with someone, test your soil, and have the local agricultural extension look at it with you and figure out what to put in. Blueberries are notoriously temperamental, but once you establish a really good home for them with enough acidity, then they do grow well. But I would not use vinegar for that. And once your blueberries are flourishing, you're going to have so many birds.
Yeah, that'll be great. And by the way, when you mentioned using vinegar to kill weeds, that's just, the gallon of white vinegar I buy at the grocery store. Nothing special, right?
You can either use a gallon of white vinegar from the grocery store and that's the cheapest. If the weeds are resistant to that, you might try horticultural vinegar, which is 20%. It's grain vinegar, 20%. It's not incredibly expensive, but it's a little more expensive than what you buy in the grocery store.
But not the fancy balsamic stuff. That would get really expensive.
No, that.
We'll go now to Mary with us in Milwaukee. Mary, hi.
Hello. Thank you for talking with me about gardening. I got the bug when I had a shade tree that got big and I couldn't grow grass underneath it, so I grew ground cover. And now over 70% of my yard is ground cover. I work a little bit in the springtime. I mulch it up, and then I spend 5 minutes mowing the rest of the lawn, and I sit back and I watch everybody else take a lot more time taking care of their lawn.
And Mary, do you like how it looks, the ground cover?
I love it, and I have people stop by and adore my yard. They ask me, how can they do what I do? Now, it's ground cover, it's hostas, there's perennials, et cetera, but they're very low maintenance, much lower than the grass.
Mary, thank you so much for the call. So switching over to non-grass doesn't have to be more work, it sounds like, Dr. Lewis.
It doesn't, especially, as Mary was saying, once it's established. So once you're, when you're doing what the other gentleman suggested with covering up your lawn and changing it to blueberries and wildflowers, that first year or two may be a bit more work, but after that, it's really, really easy.
So again, as I asked you earlier in the show, you're looking for a culture change here. How are you hoping people change the way they think about their lawn to try to make sure that that they're protecting health, protecting the environment?
Well, I think as people understand more, they will look at these emerald green lawns out of season as not something that's desirable, but as a sign of harm. You know, one of the other big issues in Wisconsin with the Great Lakes is algae, and the excess fertilizers from our lawns is one of the big contributions to algae. Between 2002 and 2007, 170,000 acres of land were developed in Wisconsin, and that's more land than the combined areas of Milwaukee, Madison, and Green Bay. Residents own a lot of land, and how they treat that land really, really matters. And so it means that we can make a really big improvement by working together.
Well, and of course, talking to you this whole time, I'm wondering what's in your yard? What do you do at home in your lawn?
Well, we still have some lawn, partly because we have animals there, and partly for our children when they're home to play. But we have lots of echinacea, and the goldfinches love the echinacea, and it's very, very easy to grow. Bee balm and echinacea grow really well in Wisconsin, too, and attract lots of pollinators, hummingbirds, and birds, so they're wonderful. I also have blueberries, and we have a bluebird nest right near our blueberries bushes, and I must admit that I seldom get any blueberries. I leave them for the bluebirds, but I enjoy seeing the birds nest there every year. We have big Annabelle hydrangeas that are just covered with honeybees a little bit later in the summer.
All right, Dr. Lewis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Dr. Diane Lewis. She's a physician. She's founder of the Great Healthy Yard Project, and she's got a book of the same name, The Great Healthy Yard Project. We've been talking about the impact of the use of lawn pesticides on drinking water and what we can do without those pesticides.